Sorry.
This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It happened about 20 years ago. About 20 years ago, I was stationed in Los Angeles waiting for a Delta flight that had been delayed. I was on my way to the East Coast and had the opportunity to sit in one of those waiting rooms for the airlines, and there across from me was seated a very interesting man. So I began to engage him in conversation. I discovered by his own self-identification that he was an international engineer for the Sony Corporation. An international engineer for the Sony Corporation. Never heard of such a designation before, but that's what he said. And then he began to tell me about the amazing technologies that were being developed. Bear in mind, this was 20 years ago, right there in LAX. He told me that it wouldn't be long before we would no longer need telephone instruments as we knew them, because they would all be implants. Well, it's kind of heading that direction. He began to tell me about some other major technological developments that he foresaw. And then without stopping, without catching a breath, he made this breathtaking statement. He said, "The day is coming when we will be gods." That's what he said. The day is coming when we will be. Actually, he didn't say gods. He said God. Well, our guest today says that our smartphones, in fact, our screens, are giving the illusion of godhood. In what way? Well, God is supposed to be omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent, all-seeing, all-knowing, all-powerful. And our guest today says our screens, our television screens, our smartphones, all of the other screens that we're seeing and watching are actually leading us inevitably toward the perception of godhood. And what is it doing then to professing Christians who claim that there's only one God? Maybe something to think about as we launch into today's program. You're listening to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's Conversation with Ever-Increasing Conviction, Talk That Transforms. Our guest today, coming from Anchorage, Alaska, that's a fur piece away, he says, we're drowning in screen time. He says he's going to extend to us today a lifeline for adults, for parents, for teachers, and ministers who want to reclaim their real lives. David Murrow joining us here on Viewpoint today from Anchorage, Alaska. David, it's good to have you on the program.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you for that very gracious introduction.
Well, what do you make of that statement by the Sony engineer?
Well, it sounds like he could have been reading my book.
It sure does.
Our screens do give us powers that people have never had before. In fact, one of the early parables that I tell in my book is I tell the story of King David. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was a humble shepherd boy, he had very little power, very few choices. But when he became king of Israel, he suddenly could summon any food he wanted, and he had a harem of women, and he could make all these choices, and he could post his opinions for all to see. Well, you know, just in the last 10 years, screens have allowed us to do all those things. We can post our opinion on social media, and everybody can see it. We can summon a...
For better or for worse, by the way.
Well, yeah. And we can summon a virtual harem of women through pornography or, you know, different sites.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really do face a lot of the temptations that were only faced by the society's elite. And all those temptations come to us via our phones.
You know, we have done here on this program over the past 25 years, quite a number of different programs, interviews concerning the problem of technology and screens and the digital world and so on. But I have to admit, Dave, that I have never read a book quite like yours. It is fascinating. And your parables that you tell, quite amazing. You say that, in fact, we're actually drowning in screen time. Tell us a little bit about that parable.
Yeah, well, just a real quick setup to the parable is a study that was done prior to the pandemic in 2018 found mm-hmm. that the average American was spending 9 hours a day on screens. And, you know, I couldn't believe that. 9 hours a day. I mean, we sleep 7 hours and 9 hours and we go to work. You know, what's left? I mean, it's literally almost every spare moment we have.
Unbelievable.
But then as I'm out in public, I think it's true. I mean, everybody in the mall, everybody at the airport, mm-hmm. Everybody who's riding in a car or riding on a subway, everybody's got their noses in a screen. So it's not that incredible to believe.
It's like we can't even see one another. All we can see is the screen.
Yeah, and you know, one of the parables I talk about is that movie, The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where everyone's bodies are plugged into this huge machine. Well, you know, we don't have our bodies plugged into a machine, but our eyes certainly are, and we're seeing the world through our screens. You know, and the content on our screens is designed to inflame our emotions, get us upset, get us excited. And this is not because the media companies are evil. The media companies know that we respond to threats, bad news, more than we do to good news. And so what the media companies do is they present us with the most threatening news that they can, which gives us the perception that the world is going to hell in a handbasket. But if you go out into the street, you see, well, we're having riots on my street. You know, the reality that we see on the screens is completely different than the reality we're seeing in real life.
Are you saying that our screens are presenting an artificial reality?
Yeah, the screens are presenting a world that is in much worse shape than the actual world we live in.
Or they're presenting us in a much better light than we really have and really are.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But what the news organizations are going to do is they're always going to focus on what's wrong. And that's mm-hmm. not because the news organizations are evil. It's because they know that our brains are attuned to respond more to bad news and controversy than to good news. And so to get our eyeballs affixed to their platforms, they have to present us with a nonstop procession of what I call wolves. You know, remember, we go back to David the shepherd boy.
Mm-hmm.
When he's sitting out there with the sheep, he doesn't really notice the sheep or the trees or the flies, the common thing. He notices the wolf that comes into the flock and is trying to take one of the lambs away. And so he's very attuned to that. He responds to that. He gets up and gets out his slingshot and throws a rock at the wolf and saves the lamb's life. And so our brains have developed to respond to threats, and the media companies know that. And so they present a very threatening world to us, a very world on the edge of collapse. You know, global warming is going to destroy the world. And, you know, it's all these apocalyptic stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that because they know that will keep us engaged.
Mm. All right. Well, it's all about marketing then. And we're being manipulated by their marketing. And you're saying it's doing dastardly things to our emotions, to our ability even to hear from God, and to certainly connect with one another. We want to look further into the depths of this because as we look at what's happened with the COVID-19 pandemic and the isolation it's caused, I suspect that it's had a horrible effect on even this issue. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Drowning in screen time. That's what we're talking about here today on Viewpoint with our special guest, David Murrow, all the way from Anchorage, Alaska, the frozen tundra up there in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm sure it is. But he says we're drowning in screen time. I want to make this book available to you because I think it's going to be extremely helpful. Friends, if we don't understand, have people that help us to understand the nefarious effects of some of the things that we take for granted, we will indeed be overcome by them. It'll be like a tsunami, and we will drown. And so we're going to make this book available to you today on the program for your gift of $17 to Save America Ministries. At $17, give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling will get it in your hands. Now, David, you're up there in Anchorage, Alaska. What are the temperatures up there right now? Do you know?
We're recording this or doing this interview in January, so it's the coldest and darkest time of the year.
Mm.
But we are on the upswing. We're getting a little more light every day. And, before you know it, we'll be back in our shorts and T-shirts having the most beautiful summers.
So as long as you can keep the mosquitoes off.
Well, that is the state bird of Alaska.
I know. It's just amazing. Between you and Wisconsin. All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, as a former trial attorney for 20 years, I always had to qualify my expert witnesses to find out if they were truly qualified to speak as an expert witness. So tell us a little about yourself.
Well, actually, I'm not a pastor or a professor or a theologian. I'm not the typical guy who might write a Christian book about screens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a 40-year veteran of the screen business. I've worked in the secular television business since the 1980s. When I got my start...
Well, you called it the screen addiction business.
Yeah. I work in the screen addiction business. I got my start in the Christian writing business in the mid-2000s when I wrote a book called Why Men Hate Going to Church.
Mm-hmm.
And that book really took off. I was interviewed in the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, NBC Nightly News, Fox News Channel. I've been on a lot of different media talking about that because there really is a lot of interest even beyond Christian circles and trying to figure out why Christianity is the only major world religion that has a gender gap. And so I've written several other books since then, but my latest book really is from the heart because having worked in the television business and speaking to a lot of men over the years, it's very common when a man who's blown up his life or a man who is in deep, deep trouble in his relationships or his business, when I hear his story, the trouble often began with a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Either he got into online pornography,
yeah,
or he got into online gambling, or he hooked up with an old flame on Facebook.
Well, just ask the lawyers that are handling family law across the country. The very first place they go when they're taking on a new case is social media.
Yeah, and there's extremists on both sides of the political fence who have followed their screens to just the craziest ideas, and it's becoming a real issue for men, but not only men but also women, and it's wrecking families. And I'm not saying that we need to go and bury our screens in the backyard,
right?
But we just have to be more judicious about how we use them, and so that's why I felt called to write the book.
Well, the Bible does say that one of the characteristics of a life following Christ is self-control, and this is one of those areas where we have to exercise self-control. Which brings up another area that I need to qualify you in. You're married, correct?
Yeah, I've been married for, it'll be 37 years soon.
All right. And how many children?
We have 3 kids and 7 grandkids.
All right. 3 kids, and how old are they?
They are, my oldest one is 33 and my youngest is 26.
Okay. So you're qualified then as a family man. You your kids have grown up since 2007 when things began to break loose, and certainly since 2012. And now you have the grandchildren. We have 10 grandchildren, and we experience the screen issue constantly. And we find that even when young people are sitting in the congregation, it's pretty hard. They're trying to hide the fact that they're not really watching or listening. They're actually watching their screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let me tell you why that is. I mentioned in the last segment how our brains are attuned to respond to bad news and not good news.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're really responding to is novelty. As I said with David, you know, he doesn't notice the sheep because they're there all the time. He notices the wolf because it's unusual. It's novel.
Mm-hmm.
And in the world that God made, in the world that 9/10 of humanity, that 99% of humanity has lived in since creation, we've lived in a very monotonous world where unusual things, where novelty was very uncommon. I mean, people lived in the same village, among the same people. Mm-hmm. They wore the same clothes. They ate the same food. Nothing much ever happened.
Well, it was monotonous by today's standards, but by their standards, it was normal.
It was normal, right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what our brains, that's how we're created. That's what our brains are. And when novelty comes along, our brains go into high alert. Called fight or flight mode.
Okay,
with constant access to screens, which began with the iPhone in 2007, all of a sudden we have flipped that equation on its head. No longer is novelty unusual. Novelty is what we get almost every moment we're awake.
And if we don't get it continually, then all of a sudden we have fits of anxiety.
That's right. That's why the kids that, you know, your grandkids, they have become habituated to a world where novelty is the norm and monotony feels wrong. And I think this might also be one of the reasons we're seeing increasing ADHD, especially among boys.
Right.
They've grown up, you know, playing video games all the time. They're used to things changing all the time. And then they get into a regular classroom with an analog teacher and papers and pencils and nothing changes. Mm-hmm. And it feels wrong to their brain. So We're involved in this reprogramming of kids' brains that is really going to have some deleterious effects down the line.
Well, most people think that this is a problem primarily for young people, but I think it's a problem for adults. In fact, the young people have been taking their cues from their parents and their grandparents, and I'm finding that even pastors are finding themselves pursued by this screen addiction.
That's true. You know, in fact, the demographic group that has the most screen time is actually older Americans. Now, their drug of choice is television, and this is why on TV, regular TV, you see so many ads for hearing aids and various medications and stuff. It's not because you got 20-somethings are not buying hearing aids. So, it's actually the older folks who have set the example. My generation, the baby boomers and then the builders, really got into television and just got used to parking themselves in front of a screen. And then the screens became mobile, they became interactive with computers. And so now the younger folks have just followed our example and are continuing to live their lives more and more in front of screens and less in front of each other.
All right. So then what has been the effect, if any, with regard to the pandemic that began, well, pretty much along about February or March of last year?
Yeah. Well, you know, the jury is still out. As we record this interview, we're still in the midst of the pandemic. There's a second wave of infections going on, and there's been different responses in different parts of the country, whether or not you can gather physically, you know, whether workplaces can open or close, whether churches are open to worship.
Mm-hmm.
But the net effect is that, well, it's two things. One, screen time has increased exponentially. I mean, well, arithmetically, I guess. There's been an increased accessing of online porn, unfortunately. There's online gaming is through the roof. The amount of time that people are spending on social media has increased, you know, because there's really nothing else to do if you're locked in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably one of the most interesting or possibly disturbing things has been the shift from in-person to online worship. I understand why churches have offered their worship services online. There's no other way to meet when you're restricted, especially if you're living in a community where the disease is widespread or there's been government mandates closing you down. But the question is, when those mandates are lifted, you've got an entire group of people who had never attended church in their pajamas, sitting with a cup of coffee in the newspaper and thinking, wow, this is really easy.
Yeah, and having no interaction and no responsibility to anybody for nothing.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? I don't have to sit next to Aunt Bertie and ask her stupid questions, and I don't have to listen to that out of out of tune choir master, who, you know, and you know, all the finding a parking place and, you know, all the irritations of church have just fallen away. I can just sit there and cozy up with the pastor for 30 minutes and then I'm done.
Isn't it interesting that all of this is coming at a time when increasingly people believe that we are moving rapidly into the period of time called the end times, the end of the age, and the scripture tells us that as we see that time approaching, we should not forsake the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but rather the more so we should be gathering together.
Well, you know, I'm not an eschatologist, but I can tell you, I believe there's going to be a strong, once the pandemic is conquered, either through herd immunity or through vaccination, however that is, God chooses to do that, there will come a time when the pandemic is over. And at that time, I believe there's going to be a large number of people who will be flocking back to church because they're going to be wanting fellowship. They're going to be, they will have seen their relationships atrophy. But there's going to be others who have just gotten accustomed to doing church on the couch. And the question is, how are we going to minister to them?
Or have found other ways, like house churches and small groups.
Right. And I'm not saying God can't use those things either. Those can be tremendously powerful.
Sure.
But, you know, it's going to be a very interesting period for the church because I think it could be a cleansing, a cleaning out of the dead wood or whatever metaphor you want to use. So it could actually be very healthy. We just don't know at this point early in 2021.
Right. Now, there's so many things in your book I found just very fascinating. I told you before we launched into the deep here that as far as I'm concerned, of all the books that we have done concerning screen time, concerning technology and so on, that this one is probably the most fascinating and pierces most deeply. There are a number of statements that you've made here that really caught my attention. One is that the screens are keeping us focused on the trivial rather than what's important.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, I just bought a digital TV. Here I am, the ultimate hypocrite, right? I bought a TV. I gotta admit it. And it's got like, it's digital, so it's got like these hundreds of extra channels. And I mean, there are channels for How to Train Your Dog and, you know, the old reruns of Westerns. And I mean, these things are utterly meaningless in the course of our lives.
Is there a channel there that says How to Hear God?
Well, you know, there might be. It's probably in Spanish, so.
Because God says, be still and know that I'm God.
Yeah, it's. I mean, even if there is such a channel, I'm not sure I would go there.
Because yeah, it would be synthetic authenticity, right?
Who knows?
A pretense, knows? Okay, so you are convinced that screens are keeping us focused on the trivial rather than what's important.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, let's say you have an hour. You could spend it watching reruns of some comedy show on your phone or your television. Or you could go over and ask your neighbor how she's doing. Mm-hmm. Or you could call your kids up. You know, I mean, the two don't even compare for importance.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go full John Piper on you here and say you have to use every moment of your life, you know, as if it's your last. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just not realistic. If you want to watch a movie, that's fine. What I'm talking about is a lifestyle that is so absorbed in screens where, you know, the moment you get home, you click on the TV, you pick up your video game controller. You're really, you end up avoiding real life, avoiding the mission God has given us.
Yeah.
And you've wasted every moment. And before you know it, you're standing before the judgment seat and you've got to give an account for how you used your time.
Now, wait a minute. The judgment seat, you're talking about judgment in the context of drowning in screen time? Now I know you're piercing to the heart of the matter.
Well, I said I wasn't an eschatologist, but I might have gotten a little close to the edge there.
No, I think it's very important because, you know, Jesus said every idle word that men will speak, they will give account thereof in the day of judgment. So I guess our time also is of preeminent importance. So how much time we devote to the screen will be flashed up on the screen at the time of judgment, it might be pretty revealing.
Well, you know, Jesus gave us two great commands, love your Lord your God and love your neighbor. And If you can't see your neighbor, if your eyes are buried in your screens, you know, we're missing opportunities to be loving with those around us.
All right, we're going to pick up on that after this break. Friends, drowning in screen time, $17 is going to put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings. All at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Are you drowning in screen time? Think about it for a moment. Is it convicting? Is the Holy Spirit speaking into your heart, your life, and saying, you know what, son, you know what, daughter, you know what, I'm not hearing much from you these days, but you sure are spending a lot of time in front of that screen, your television, your game, your cell phone, your smartphone, whatever other device you have. Our guest today, David Murrow, says that screens are tricking our subconscious minds, tricking us, making us believe, for instance, that we're living in community when, in fact, they're actually replacing community. They're making us more antisocial than social. You agree with that, Dave?
Yes, I do. You know, it's I know a lot of people who have 1,000 friends on Facebook, but they don't have anybody they can get real with in real life.
Isn't that amazing? That's scary.
You know, well, I'll tell you one of the funny things about social media too. What we're finding is that people are getting on social media and they're reconnecting with old friends. And I'm no different. I still talk to folks from high school that I knew 40 years ago, old college friends, maybe old business associates. And what I find is that I'm using my relationship energies to maintain those relationships, but I'm not going out and making new friends with people that I'm likely to see again.
Interesting.
And that's harming my witness. I mean, if I don't get out and see the, you know, my neighbors who are right around me, the people I'm going to look in the eyes and, you know, tell them about the Lord. No, I'm my nose is buried in Facebook, maintaining relationships with people I'm probably never going to see again. So we're replacing flesh and blood relationships with virtual ones with people we're never likely to interact with again.
All right, let's pick up on that word virtual, because rooted in the word virtual is the word virtue, and yet it seems that virtual is just the opposite of virtue. I'm thinking of about 10 years ago, Time magazine had a cover story called 10 Ideas That Are Changing the World. Number 7 was called Synthetic Authenticity. Try to get your mind around that. Synthetic Authenticity. In other words, to live a life of pretense is the going thing. It was a Harvard guru who was telling business people that they should not focus on providing the real thing, but the fake real. Don't try to give them the real thing. For one thing, they're not willing to pay for it. And secondly, that's not really what they want anyway. They just want the pretense of the real thing. Well, that got picked up in our churches. So a lot of synthetic authenticity has been picked up even in the broader body of Christ over the past 20 years. And it seems to me that that ties in with a statement that you made in one of your chapters, humans are happily trading real life for an illusion.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, we call it image crafting. When we go on to social media, you know, we present our home runs, not our strikeouts. And so everybody's out on Facebook and Instagram showing their amazing, idyllic lives. And so other people, our friends, get on there and they all present their idyllic lives. And nobody's really able to be real about who they are because, you know, we're all busy image crafting and creating this, what did you call it, synthetic authenticity?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta remember that one.
Yeah, you're going to have to, in fact, you're going to have to get a copy of my book, Seduction of the Saints, to know more about that. It is an incredible thing that has seduced us, pastor and people alike, into a weirdity of life that is totally unreal, which, well, let's talk about this phenomenon that you've indicated that actually the screens are granting us the illusion that we are virtual gods. I found this to be absolutely fascinating, and it's true. It's absolutely true. I'm observing this among those that I deal with. Virtual gods. What are the characteristics of God?
Yeah, it's omnipotent. That's knowing everything, omnipresent, being everywhere at once.
Right.
And omnipotence, omnipresence, and what's the other one?
Omniscience.
Knowing everything.
Yeah.
And our screens actually give us a measure of all those things. If there's any fact, you know, I mean, 30 years ago, if you wanted to know some fact, like who's the current, you know, president of the Republic of Moldova or any of these sorts of facts, you had to go down to the library and look it up.
Right.
And now those facts are, you can know them in seconds.
Absolutely.
So that's sort of an omniscient.
Siri knows everything.
Yeah. How about omnipresence? Well, I can log on to webcams around the world, and I can see what's going on at an eagle's nest in Canada. Mm-hmm. I can watch a live rugby match in South Africa. I can project my presence around the world through Zoom. People can meet with me who are halfway around the globe. I'm sitting in Alaska. They're sitting in Florida, and we can have a meeting. So I have that. And then, of course, the powers that our screens give us are absolutely amazing. I mean, we can send wealth around the world with a few taps on our screen. You know, we don't need treasure chests anymore. We don't even need Western Union. We can just, my daughter lives in Australia, and if she needs money, I can go onto a website, and within a couple of days, boom, and it appears in her account. So, you know, we really do have godlike powers. But here's the thing. Godlike powers are always served with a side dish of crushing pressure. I don't know if you remember that movie a few years ago, Bruce Almighty.
I know the title. I didn't see it.
Yeah. Well, just very quickly, Jim Carrey complains to God that his life is in the pit. And so he is suddenly, Morgan Freeman plays God. Morgan Freeman grants him all the power of the Godhead. And his life, you know, is great on one level because he can do whatever he wants. But in the end, he ends up messing things up terribly, almost ruins the world in the process. And I think this is what's happening to us with our screens. We've been granted so much power. We've also been given a side dish of crushing pressure to go with it. And that's why we're seeing unprecedented levels of suicide and suicidal ideation, depression, isolation, and all the pressure of having to exercise these powers. These are powers that were not meant for us to exercise. They were meant for God to exercise over us.
All right. Is that why you have a chapter called Screens Are Anxiety Machines?
Well, that and just the as we said before, you know, the producers of screen content know how to push our buttons because the more worried and upset we get about things, the more we consume those products. If you picked up a newspaper, for example, and it was all good news, you'd probably throw the thing in the trash. You're looking for that story about that corrupt politician or that that mission gone wrong or that, you know, the gossip magazines are all about relationships and turmoil. I mean, those are the things that interest us as humans. So that's where the anxiety comes from. You know, in times past, we knew a little bit about what was going on in the world. Now we know thousands of different stories. We know about tsunamis. We know about earthquakes. We know about corruption. It's constantly in our faces. And so it gives us a perception that the world is much worse off than it actually is and causes us to be anxious.
About 12 years ago, I was in a layover in another airport in the Midwest. And observed a copy of USA Today that is ubiquitous there in all the airports, And I found it fascinating because the front page was very unusual. There was a huge word about 3 inches tall in very unusual letters in green on a newspaper that normally is black and white. The word was trust. And the whole feature of that particular issue was how Americans are losing trust in their institutions and in every aspect of life. And that was before this recent election. How are the screens accomplishing that?
Well, I mean, that's exactly what they're doing. What you have to understand is prior to 1980, most Americans had a daily newspaper. Mm-hmm. They might hear a few news stories on radio, and then you'd get an hour of news a day. You'd get 5:30, the national news came on. At 6, it was the local news. And then it was back to Batman and Gilligan's Island and, you know, just mindless entertainment, right? So we got a little bit of news, but then we got a whole lot of entertainment in real life. When in 1980, a cable mogul from Atlanta launched CNN, and the 24-hour news cycle was born.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, news, and then the internet came along. And so we had 24 hours of news that news directors had to fill. And then the internet came along, and there's 500 stories a day that have to be written, Washington Post. And so where do you get stories that are going to be interesting? Well, you send reporters out to find the most controversial, upsetting things you can find.
Mm.
And so everybody's competing to find that thing that gets us upset, that gets us anxious, that gets us fighting with each other.
And there's no place for truth in the midst of it.
Well, what it does, all this mistrust, you know, all the stories, I don't think politicians are any more corrupt than they've ever been, but we've got a news apparatus that tells us their corruption over and over and over again.
Instantaneously.
You have to fill that time. So, you know, marriage is no worse than it's ever been, but they tell the stories of divorced couples so they hear about divorce, and the couple say, oh, maybe we should get divorced. And so it becomes this feeding upon itself.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these trends are driven by this 24-hour news cycle, this need for controversy, this need to take institutions down a peg. And you know, the church has been very, in the crosshairs of the media for years.
Sure.
Some of it's anti-religion bias, but some of it's just that need for controversy.
Well, absolutely. And then it was a cover story for a Christian media magazine, and I'll never forget it. It said, image is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Image is everything. Synthetic authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably the scandal that's been worse for the church in the last 20 years is the Catholic priest. If you really dig into that story, fewer than 4% of the priests were ever accused, and only 1% was ever convicted of a crime. But most people perceive the entire Christian movement as a bunch of pedophiles because of what the news... And then, most people don't make a distinction between Catholic or Protestant. Just, every pastor is a pedophile. It's really damaging to constantly be told that your institutions are failing.
All right, so where would he go from here? That's what we want to talk about in this final segment. What can we do if we're drowning in screen time? What can you do? Are you going to eat more of the poisoned apple, or are we going to deal something with it?
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Who can do anything about drowning in screen time. Is there some sort of a rescue party that we can send out to prevent our young people and, yes, even adults from drowning in screen time? What are we supposed to do? Where do we begin? Is there a lifesaver that we can throw out? Is there an anchor somehow that we can fix down to keep people from drifting even further into the lordship of screen time? We want to talk about that here in the next 12 minutes, and I'm so glad that you've joined us, friends. We're talking with David Murrow concerning his book, Drowning in Screen Time, A Lifeline for Adults, Parents, Teachers, and Ministers Who Want to Reclaim Their Real Lives. $17 is going to put the book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or you can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Again, if you're writing a check, at $5 for postage and handling. Okay, where do we go from here? It seems to me that it should begin with parents and grandparents and pastors. It should begin with people who are in a position charged with leadership under God. What do you think?
That's a great point. I think there are probably a lot of parents listening who are frustrated, or maybe even if you've got little ones and you're wanting to set some boundaries before mm-hmm. your kids get into the screen years.
Mm-hmm.
First, the thing I would say is you don't want to ever, you want to severely restrict the amount of screen time that your little ones have until they're in school age. I would say almost no interact screen time, no video games, no smartphone. You should give them a careful amount of non-interactive screen time, like watching good wholesome television programming, watching it as a family. That's fine. Watching a good family movie. Those things.
If there
are
is
great,
such a thing, yeah.
Oh yeah, there is, and that's one of the nice things about the proliferation of platforms like PureFlix and mm-hmm. family friendly. And there's even good friendly stuff, family-friendly stuff on some platforms like Netflix. I mean, I certainly wouldn't recommend everything they have, but there are some good movies on there. You just mm-hmm. have to be very selective about what you see.
All right.
And the other thing I would say is once your kids do have devices, one of the ironclad rules I would say is that no devices at the dinner table or after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I would, as the mother or father, you need to collect all of their handheld devices, all of their iPads and everything, and lock them up in a charging station until the next day.
Interesting.
Because you really want to have that family dynamic. What we're finding is that families that use screens after dinner are doing something called being alone together. They each have their own personal device. They're together, physically together in the house, but they mm-hmm. aren't interacting.
Which is a pretense of society.
Well, what that does is that preempts all those little interactions that parents need to have with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what's left is that we only talk to them about urgent things. Hey, why didn't you clean up the room? Have you done your college application? Why is your soccer uniform dirty? You end up becoming a nag because the only thing you talk to your kids about is what you're doing wrong or what
okay.
has to be done to meet a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And that really drives a wedge between parents and kids. And that's one of the big undiagnosed ills of screen time, is that it's keeping parents and kids from having those normal positive interactions that we would have when we used to look at each other.
All right, but every parent is going to experience pressure, and that's what it means to be a parent. You're going to experience mm-hmm. pressure that's going to test the edges of your authority, of your sovereignty in your home.
Yeah, that's right. But, and you've got to, I mean, if you're going to take screens away in the evening, you've got to do something else. You've got to, you know, do family reading, bike riding, building blanket forts. I mean, you've got to interact with the kids. You can't just say no screens and then I'm going to ignore you. And that's one of the things that parents are forgetting how to do, because we, mm-hmm. too, are absorbed in our screens. We are used to picking up our phones and checking Instagram every 7 minutes. And, you know, the change has to start with us as adults. We've got to make the decision that we are going to live in the real world and not the screen world.
Okay, speaking of the real world, it depends on what you mean by real world. Today, the real world is a screen world.
Mm.
So people will just say, well, that is the real world. How do you respond?
Well, no, it's not the real. There's almost nothing real about this green world. I mean, we really have to look at Jesus, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, Jesus said, love thy neighbor, love your neighbor. We've got to really practice being in the real world, talking to people in real time. You know, that's one of the things that texting has done. The younger generation of adults was polled, mm-hmm. and it was discovered that 77% of people under 30 prefer texting to face-to-face talking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because there's no responsibility to face-to-face talking.
Well, face-to-face talking is hard. I mean, what I'm doing right now with you, this is passing away. The idea that you say something and I answer, I only have like 2 seconds to think of what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
With a text, I can think 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I can craft the perfect answer. So by slowing down everything we say and recording everything for perpetuity, we put huge pressure on people to craft the perfect answer.
Mm.
And it's making conversation more difficult and more pressure-filled than it ever was when we just
And
talked.
Not only that, but it's also creating tensions and unwanted, unintended consequences to the things that we say, because they're not nuanced and we don't have an opportunity to check one another and say, what did you mean by that? That doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, no, when you talk to somebody face to face, body language, facial expression, there's so many ways we communicate other than words. When you
mm-hmm.
put something in a text, even with an emoji on your text, sometimes the meaning is misconstrued and it gets recorded forever.
And maybe you pick the wrong emoji.
Well, yeah, and then it gets posted on, you know, Twitter, and the mob comes after you, and it's really a horrible way to communicate. When we really do need to focus on teaching our kids how to have face-to-face, real-time conversations, because if you think about all the important conversations of life, that's how they happen. They don't happen over social media. They happen face-to-face.
Okay, now, you have a chapter called I'm a Minister Who Wants to Help My Flock.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, the eyes of churchgoers, both young and old, are fixed not on Jesus, but on their screens. Screens may be rightly identified as the true objects of our worship now. In exchange, our screens have given us fear, anxiety, loneliness, and a puffed-up sense of our own rightness. Those are powerful statements.
Yeah, if I were a pastor. And pastors are going to come under increasing pressure in the next 10 years to address this issue of screen use and screen overuse and screen abuse. Those are the points that I would begin my message with. You know, the Lord said, you shall have no other gods before me. If we are spending 9 hours a day looking at something, that is our God. That is the object of our worship.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's really incumbent upon us as ministers of the gospel to point out to people that, you know, we really are idolizing what we see. We're believing things that we see, and we are not plugged into the eternal. We're plugged into the right now through our screens.
So where you put your time, where you put your money, these are the things that define where you put your trust.
Yes, yes. Where, you know, Hebrews 12:2, let us fix our eyes upon Jesus. If our eyes are fixed upon our screen, we're not seeing Jesus. We're not seeing the needs around us. If we're, you know, I remember a time when people standing in line at the grocery store would talk to each other
mm-hmm.
or share a smile. And now, in addition to being 6 foot distance, we also we're also just buried in our screens. So I don't see the person next to me. I can't perceive that she needs prayer. You know, I don't see the woman down the street.
And don't even care because you're fixated on a screen.
I'm fixated on what's happening in Washington, D.C., politics, right? Something I can do nothing about. I can help the woman next door, you know. I can't help what's going on in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so what my screens do is they focus me on areas where I have little power and take my eyes away from areas where I'm supposed to, where I can exercise God's power through the Holy Spirit to change the world. It is the ultimate satanic deception, is this distraction that is going on.
Wow, that powerful statements coming from a guy who has for 40 years been working in the TV and advertising business. You're calling it the screen addiction business, and indeed that's true. But I'm going to bring something up that might be kind of tender for a lot of people. And we were talking about the pastor who wants to help his flock. Mm-hmm. I personally am deeply troubled by the replacement of the Word of God in the hands of the people by a monster screen. To me, it is the ultimate declaration that we don't care that much about the Word of God, and pastors are not helping people to even find where the Word of God is. They are actually rendering them little children and not training them to be mature.
Now, are you talking about the replacement of paper Bibles with screen Bibles? Is that what you're speaking of? Or are you talking
I'm talking about the big screen in front of the That's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a two-edged sword. I mean, again, if you use that screen properly, I've seen pastors who've used the screen very skillfully to illustrate their point and make their point and put the scriptures up on the screen. I mean, yeah, we are losing the ability to thumb through the Bible and find different paths.
People don't even know where things are in the Bible. It's amazing.
Well,
it's shocking.
It is. It's a trade-off. That's the way everything is.
Screens, in other words, we're trading off the synthetic for the real.
Well, screens, you know, they give and they take away. They give us new powers, but we pay the price.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we need to understand what price we're paying. And what is it we're trying to accomplish? Are we wanting people to become more and more mature in the faith, or are we trying to train them to become eternal teenagers glued to their screens?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really address that in the book.
I know. That's why this program is unique, because we don't hesitate to talk about the real issues out there, no matter where they come. I think God is concerned about something like that, don't you think?
Well, I think God is concerned about where we fix our eyes and how we worship and the ideas we put into our head.
Yeah.
I would say overwhelmingly the ideas that our screens put in our head are not healthy, and we need to be focusing more on the people around us rather than the artificial reality that we see on our screen.
Are you able to affect your grandchildren? How are you able to deal with your grandchildren since you don't have ultimate authority in their lives?
Well, my son is also really on board with this. He does a good job keeping his boys in the real world. We just bought a house near the grandkids. We're going to put up swings and swing sets, and we're not going to do screen time at Nani and Pops' house. We're going to keep those kids active and keep their muscles moving.
Good for you.
Whatever you can do to win that battle, to keep them in the analog world, the real world God created, not the screen world that man has created.
Well, bless your ever-loving soul. And if you can do up there in the frozen tundra of Alaska, how many months of real lifetime do you get up there?
What do you mean lifetime?
Well, other than frozen.
Oh, well, usually it's 6 and 6. We have a really nice summer that starts early May, and then peters out mid-September when the leaves are off. So, you know, it's a long winter. That's probably the big beef on it.
Mm-hmm.
In Anchorage, where I live, the winters are fairly mild because they're right by the ocean. It's actually usually warmer in Anchorage than it is in Minneapolis. That's pretty cold. But, yeah, we're having fun up in Alaska, and, you know, we don't mind the cold and just put on another sweater.
Well, good. Dave, thanks so much for joining us here on the program today. I think you're a great blessing, and you brought up very powerful insights concerning the matter of the screens that are taking dominion over our lives. Drowning in screen time, friends. Let's throw out the lifeline for all of us here. Get a copy of the book, $17. We'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. I urge you to become a partner with us. Yes, even today we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Discipling for destiny. That's right. That's what we're doing. Help us to keep on the air. It's been 25 and a half years now, confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home. Don't wait on the other guy to do it. Send that check forthwith or go to our website, saveus.org.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.